Okay, we'd like to start our lesson tonight. I'd like to thank all of you for coming. I told you I was going to say that. But if you've got a Bible, we want to open it up to Genesis chapter 12. And this is going to be our last look into the book of Genesis, Genesis being the book of beginnings. And last week, we saw how the languages of the world began. We saw how the cultures of the world began. We saw the various ethnic differences in the world begin last week in our lesson of Genesis chapter 11. And this lesson tonight in Genesis 12 happened a period of time after the events of last week's lesson. And we saw that Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, were the three sons that came from Noah. And one of Shem's descendants was a man named Terah. And actually, we want to back up to Genesis chapter 11, and let's look at verse 27. We want to pick up on a man whose name is Abram. But he comes from the descendancy or from the line of Shem. So we're looking eventually for a man named Abram. And in verse 27 of Genesis chapter 11, it says, "This is the account of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram." Now he's our central figure for tonight's lesson, Abram. He was the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. While his father Terah was still alive, Haran, that's one of his sons, died in Ur of the Chaldees, in the land of his birth. Now, if you look on the map for just a minute, Ur of the Chaldees, how many of you remember where Baghdad was in Iraq? That was the capital city in the war that we had with Iraq. Well, if you can look on the map, Baghdad is right here, and the war was commonly called the Persian Gulf War. And the Persian Gulf is this body of water right here. Well, Ur of the Chaldees was between Baghdad and the Gulf, the Persian Gulf here. So it's down south, very close to the north end of the Persian Gulf. So it's in the country of Iraq, south of Baghdad. That's where Ur was. So in other words, that's where Haran had his home. And that's where Terah had his home. And so this is where they were living. In verse 29, it says, "Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. And now Sarai was barren, and she had no children." This is basically some biographical information to lead up to Abram. So in verse 31, "Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram. Together they set out from Ur the Chaldees to go to Canaan, but when they came to a city called Haran," this is another city, "they lived and settled there. And Terah lived 205 years, and he died in the city of Haran." What this is basically telling us is that they moved from a point right here on the map, from Ur, and they went up into the city of Haran. And Haran, they have discovered, archaeologists have uncovered the city, and they know exactly where it is. And they know exactly what was going on there from the relics that they found and things like that. But the ancient city of Haran is in the southeast corner of Turkey, which is right here. So basically what they did was they made a move north up this valley, up what we would call current-day Iraq, and they settled in southeast Turkey, which is right there. Now, for some reason, it says that they had intended to go somewhere else, but they ended up stopping here, living there, and then Abram's father, Terah, died in this city. So this is where they moved. Now, all of this area right here was essentially the same culture and the same country. So they moved north. We don't know why they moved north, but this is where they were. And so in Genesis chapter 12, Now, Abram becomes the central figure in our lesson tonight. And in verse 1, oh, and let me tell you the date. This happened, Genesis chapter 12, we can accurately date at about 2500 B.C. or 4,500 years ago. They have uncovered evidence that shows that there was a man by the name of Abramu who lived and visited in the very place that we see Abraham going to in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 12. They've uncovered all kinds of evidence. So this happened about 4,500 years ago, or around in that time. So in Genesis chapter 12, we see, verse 1, the Lord had said to Abram. Now, I'd like to bring out a point right here, and that is, look at the way God is still talking to human beings. He's still communicating. You remember in last week's lesson, the people were being disobedient, and God wanted to communicate to them. You remember when, in the week before that, Noah and the people at his time were living on the earth, they were being disobedient, God was still talking to them. He said, 120 years, I'm going to give you to stop and to change, and then you're in big trouble. And he talked to Adam and Eve. And he's continually talking to people. And now, when Abram is here, we see God being faithful again, still communicating to people. And the Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to a land that I will show you. Now, if Abraham is going to leave his country, his people, and his father's house, what does that make Abraham? Any guesses? Now, many of you have left your countries. What does that make you? What's that?
Travelers?
What kind of travelers? If you leave your country, you become an international. See that? Isn't that interesting? God told Abram, leave your country. Move out. Leave your father's family. Leave your language. Leave your relatives. Leave your country. And go to a place that's different. Different language, maybe. Different customs. Different habits. See, God is telling Abraham to become an international. And we're going to find out that this fellow Abram is a very important person. See? So when Abraham is doing some of these things, you as internationals might be able to relate with some of the things that he's dealing with, because he's going to a strange place. So God told him to leave his country, his people, and his father's household, and God says, go to a land that I will show you. And verse 2, and look at what he says. Look, this is what God says to Abram. And I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Now, God is saying a lot of things here, and let's see if we can learn some of these things. First of all, he says, I'm going to make you, in verse 2, I will make you into a great nation. Now, this is a promise that God gives to Abram. And this is a rather interesting promise, because if you look down in verse 4, look at the second half of verse 4. Abram was 75 years old. Do you see that? He was 75 years old, and there was a problem with Abram. He had no children. And yet God says up in verse 2, I will make you into a great nation. Now, how can you have descendants that would become a great nation if you don't even have your first child? That's impossible. It doesn't happen that way. And he's not talking about going down to the adoption agency and adopting some kids. So he's making an incredible promise here. The guy's an old man, and he's 75, and he has no kids, but he says something really big is going to happen to you, Abraham. So that's real interesting. And he says, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great. The end of verse 2 says, Do you remember what the people last week were doing in Genesis chapter 11? They were building this city and building this tower to make a name for themselves. You remember that? If you want to look back, if you have the red Bible like I do, on in chapter 11, verse 4, it says, he says, so that we can make a name for ourselves. And guess what? The name they tried to make for themselves didn't last too long. Because God doesn't like people who are proud. He doesn't agree with people who are proud. Look what God says to Abraham. God says to Abraham in verse 2, I, God, will make your name great. If people want to have a great name, it's going to have to be God who's going to do it. They're not going to make their own name great. And then in verse 3, it says, I will bless those who bless you. I will curse whoever curses you. In other words, God is going to be kind to Abram. He's going to protect Abram. He's going to provide for Abram. And then he makes an even greater promise. And watch this. At the end of verse 3, he says, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Now that's all peoples. That means everybody. That would even include people who are alive on the earth today. All peoples means all peoples. And all peoples means all families, all countries. Remember last week, God spread everybody out over all the earth, and he had all the nations separated in all the places that they were supposed to be, the Chinese in China, the Japanese in Japan, the Americans in America, the Bolivians in Bolivia, and all, he's got them all there. And now he says, people all over are going to be blessed on earth through you, Abram. Okay? Now, how do you think that can happen? How could something that Abram did 4,000 years ago affect us today? That's a tough question, because all peoples means all peoples. This promise means that the person, the promised one that God had said that he was going to send to the earth, is going to be a descendant from Abram. That's the promise. Because when that promised one comes to the earth and he destroys the source of evil in the world, that will be a blessing for everybody. Right? When evil is finally taken care of, when the source of evil is finally destroyed, that is going to have an impact on everybody. So when that happens, that will affect everybody in the world. And that will affect us. And that is what God is saying here. That through Abraham, the promised person that God said he would send, all the way back in Genesis chapter 3, he gave the promise to Adam and Eve, that person is going to come through Abraham's family line. That's what he says. That's what that means there. So, how do you think you would feel if God said all these wonderful things to you? Do you think you would be happy or sad? Or do you think you'd be confused? He's got one main command to Abram. Abram, leave your country. Put on your boots, pack your bags, and start walking. And all of these other wonderful things, you're going to be an important person, famous. You're going to be instrumental. You're going to be a key person, an important person in God's plan to get God's message to people all over the world. I think I would feel excited. I might feel a little nervous, too. Because this is kind of a new idea here. God hasn't done this before. He hasn't told this to other people to do. So anyway, we have to ask a question now. What do you think Abraham's going to do? Is he going to do what God says? Does he believe what God tells him here? We saw Noah believed God. God told Noah to build a boat, and Noah went right out and built a boat. Noah had faith. He believed in what God had told him. Verse 4 tells us what Abraham believed. Verse 4 says, so Abraham left. No questions, no comments. He got up, he heard the message, and he took off. And that obviously means he must have believed what God had told him. He obeyed. See? So he left as the Lord had told him, and Lot, who was his nephew, went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, those would be slaves, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. So they ended up going, not too sure where they were supposed to go, and they ended up in this place called Canaan. Now on the map, let me show you where he went. They were in Turkey, the city of Haran, southeast Turkey here, and they went west, and then they went south, down through Syria, down through Lebanon today, and they ended up in the area called Canaan, or what we would call Palestine today, which is where the land of Israel is. Okay? If you remember when they were shooting Scud missiles at the land of Israel in the war, that is exactly where Abraham ended up in his travels. So he basically went west, and then he went south along the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. And that is where he stopped. So down in verse 7, it says, "The Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your offspring.'" Now here he's talking about his descendants, the children that are going to be Abraham. Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. "To your offspring, I will give this land," which is the land of what we would call Palestine today. And here's another promise. Abraham has gotten to this area. He arrives, and God says, "I'm going to give this, all this land that you see, to your family and their descendants." And so, at the end of verse 7, he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now, what do they do on an altar? Anybody know what they do on an altar? Come on, don't be so shy. They what? Okay, they make a sacrifice. Now, here we see that Abraham is following in the tradition that started all the way back in the beginning with God. You remember when Adam and Eve sinned? God took animal skins and put them on Adam and Eve to clothe them, to shield them, to protect them, to save them from being embarrassed because they knew they were naked. They knew they were now evil. Do you remember when Cain and Abel brought their sacrifices? Abel brought an offering, an animal offering. He was following in the tradition that would show the sinfulness of man. Sin brings death. And that it was also to show what God would have to do. Death has to be involved in paying for sin. And so Abel brought an animal sacrifice. Do you remember what Noah did after the flood? They came down out of the ark. The waters had gone down. He made a sacrifice to show that he was evil. Everybody was evil, showing that they are going to trust God, that he is going to take care of their problem with sin, their tendency to be evil. And now we see Abraham following in the same tradition. He believes God's message. He believes that this promised person is coming. And he believes that that promised person is going to take care of sin. He's going to pay for it. And so he builds an altar. In other words, he makes a sacrifice there to the Lord who had appeared to him. So we find that this message, the fact that the people that God chooses are the people who believe in his word, they believe in his promise, they believe in his commands. Okay? Now, let's go all the way over to chapter 21 in the book of Genesis. God made this spectacular promise, and I need to give you some news about Abraham. By the time we get to chapter 21, by the time we get to chapter 21, 25 more years have gone by. So now, that makes Abraham how old? 100. Okay, we're good on math tonight. He's now 100 years old, and guess what? He still doesn't have any kids. Now, his wife Sarah is 10 years younger than Abraham. That makes her 90 years old, and together they still have no kids. Now, how is God going to get out of that one? This is going to be a real strange one. Let's watch what happens in Genesis chapter 21. Let's read the first verse, and it says, "Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah as he had said. You notice that? What God says, you can count on it happening exactly the way he says. God doesn't lie. He doesn't do the bait and switch game. He doesn't say one thing and then do another. He doesn't change his mind. What he says is going to happen exactly the way he says. So he's gracious to Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Domino's delivers pizza. God delivers on his promises. He does what he says. And in verse 2, Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age. And watch this, at the very time God had promised him. Now, this sounds incredible. A lady who is 90 years old gets pregnant. And on top of that, she delivers the baby. Now, women who are 20, 25, 30, that's a tough job to deliver a baby. But can you imagine when you're 100 years old or 90 years old and having this baby? Well, obviously, more than natural events are taking place here. God is supernaturally doing something incredible. And in verse 3, Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. The word Isaac means laughter. They were laughing. They thought this was great. This brought joy to their hearts. They finally had a baby that God had promised to them. And all they could do was laugh. They thought this was the best thing. They couldn't believe it. God had been gracious to them. God had been kind to them. And God said, you will have a son. Can you imagine waiting 25 years for something to happen? And the older you get, it seems like it's more hopeless and more hopeless. And now it's, oh, it'll never happen. And then all of a sudden, boom, it happens. And they were so excited that all they could do was laugh. They just thought this was the best thing they'd ever seen. And so now, can you imagine being 92 years old and having a 2-year-old child? Can you imagine the kid running all over the tent, you know, and tearing everything down, and the poor lady's as old to be a great-grandmother, and she's the mother of this child. Man, she must have had it really hard. But anyway, so now they have their boy. They have their son. God promised them a baby. God delivered the baby, brought it about just the way he said. And one more thing. I forgot to say this, too. Abram's name has been changed to Abraham, and Sarai's name has been changed to Sarah. So the people are the same. Names have been changed just a little bit. So now they have this baby. God promised it. God made it happen. Whatever God says happens just the way he says it. And now we want to move down to Genesis chapter 22. All right? Now by the time we get to Genesis chapter 22... There has been some time that has passed. We don't know exactly how much time, but we think it's around 10, maybe 15 years. And so at this point in time, Isaac appears to be a young teenager. All right? So Abraham is very old. He's probably 110 years old by now. And we have something very interesting going on in chapter 22. Of Genesis. And we want to start at verse 1. And it says, sometime later, God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Abraham. And he replied, here I am. Now, the events in this chapter are what makes Abraham one of the most famous individuals of all time. There are three groups of religious people who respect and almost reverence this man, Abraham. Muslims really respect and admire Abraham. Jewish people respect and admire Abraham. And Christian people respect and admire Abraham. So a majority of the world's people who know anything about the Bible respect and admire Abraham a whole lot. And it's because of what happened in this chapter. And that's why this chapter is really important. So let's keep reading. He says then in verse 2, then God said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." Now, what's going on here? Abraham has one son. God said, through your one son, you will become a great and mighty nation. In other words, you will have all kinds of descendants that will just be to make a big nation, a big whole new group of people. But that's one promise that God has said. But now look what God is doing. He's saying, go take your son and kill him on top of a mountain. Now, does that make sense? Does that sound like God has got maybe his wires crossed or something? Does God know what he's doing here? What is he doing? He's just told Abraham to take his only son and kill him on the top of a mountain. Now, that doesn't make any sense to us. What's God up to? Well, if you look at verse 1, you can see what God is doing. Now, Abraham doesn't know what God is doing at this point. Look at verse 1. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He's giving Abraham a little test. And you remember we said that Abraham was a man who believed God. When God told him to go to a foreign country, he went to a foreign country. He was showing that he trusted God. He believed in God. He counted on God. He depended on God. And now God wants to test his faith. He wants to see if Abraham will really go to the limit in his faith with God. This is going to be a hard test for Abraham. And the thing that he loves most, his only son, he waited 100 years to get this boy, a special boy, delivered, promised by God, brought about by God. It was a supernatural event. And now God says, I want you to get rid of him. Take him up there and kill him. So this is a big test. This is not a small little thing in Abraham's life. This is really big. This is everything that he loves wrapped up in this one boy. All of God's promises are wrapped up in this one little boy named Isaac. And what is Abraham going to do? Does he really believe God? Let's look at verse 3. Verse 3 says, "Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him 2 of his servants and his son Isaac." Is he still trusting in God? Yeah. There is no hesitation on Abraham's part. Not only did he got up early the next morning. And on top of that, when he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him. See? He's still believing God. He doesn't know what's going to happen exactly on the mountaintop. But somehow he knows that God cannot contradict himself. He's not going to go against what he said before. He knows something interesting is going to happen, but he doesn't know what. On the top of the mountain. On the third day, Moriah was a ways away from where he was living, so it took 3 days to get there. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there." And look at what he says at the end of verse 5. "We will worship and then we will come back to you." Now, how does he know that we will come back? God has told him to go up there and kill his son. But he says, "We," plural, "the boy and I will come back to you." Obviously, Abraham is thinking, if I have to kill my son, God's promise still must come true. Therefore, if Isaac dies, God's word cannot be stopped. That means God is going to have to make my boy come back to life again. You see that? God's not going to change his word. His word is good forever. And he sees the what looks to be like a contradiction here. But he says, trusting God, we're going to go there and we're going to come back. Okay? So he's still hanging on to his faith in God. Verse 6, Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. And as he carried the fire and the knife, I'm sorry, and he carried the fire and the knife, as the two of them went together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father?" "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Now see, Isaac was not a dummy. He knew that if you were going to worship God, you took fire, you took wood, and you brought an animal. And he's looking around, and they had a torch, they had the wood, and Isaac says, "Hey, wait a minute, we're missing something here. Where's this animal that we're supposed to sacrifice?" This is the missing element, the missing ingredient here. You need three things, they've got two. Where is it? Look at what Abraham says in verse 8. Look at his confidence when he says this. Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." You see that? How does he know that? You know how he knows? Because he believes in the promise of God. He knows that Isaac has to live somehow through this ordeal. He's got to come through this thing. He's got to come back alive. And if he doesn't die, then somehow God is going to have to provide. And that's what he tells Isaac, his son. And so the two of them went on together. He knows that God is faithful. He knows that God provides for people. He knows that God provides for what people need. God already provided him his son Isaac. That was a miracle that God had done. And so in verse 9, when they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. Here we go. He bound his son Isaac, that means tied him up, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Now, I would imagine by this time, if I were Isaac, I would be very nervous. Okay? If you were Isaac and you're tied up and you're laying on this pile of wood and you know what happens to those animals when they get placed on that wood, those animals die. And I would imagine that Isaac is very nervous right now. He's probably not saying too much either. I don't know what I would say if I were Isaac laying on top of that wood. But I'm sure it was not a very comfortable position for him. And then in verse 10, then he, that's Abraham, reached out his hand and took the knife to slay or to kill his son. There's Isaac. He's on the wood. The torch is over here. Abraham is reaching over to take the knife. He's got it in his hand. And just as he has it in his hand, he's ready to kill his son. In verse 11, but the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham!" God calling out, "Here I am," he replied. Verse 12, "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Was Abraham serious in his faith with God? Sure he was. Did he trust God? Absolutely. Was he willing to go to the limit in his faith? Sure. When God said do something, Abraham did it. But now what are we going to do? We know that Abraham believes God. And this is why Abraham is very well respected and admired by these people. But the sacrifice hasn't happened yet. Look what happens in verse 13. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket, now that's a thorn bush, a thicket is a thorn bush, he saw a ram caught. caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. You see that? Worship still took place. God was honored. The sacrifice happened. Sacrifices show the sinfulness of man. God requires death for sin. The worship happened. The animal died, and Isaac, his son, was spared. And so Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided." How did Abraham know that God was going to provide a sacrifice, an animal? Because he had already promised to provide the promised one, who was going to take care of evil, all the evil in the world. And if he believed God about the promised one, why couldn't he trust God with his only son? See, it's a matter of being consistent in what you believe. Why would you believe God about one thing and not believe God about another? If you believe God about his promise, if you believe God about his provision, if you believe God that he's going to send this person that we're calling the promised one, why not believe him about your family? Why not trust God about your life? Why not trust God about your job? See, Abraham was consistent in what he believed. And there's something else very interesting about this animal, this ram that they found. If you look back up in verse 13, he saw a ram that was caught in a thorn bush by its horns. Okay? Now, do you remember that God had said to Noah when they got out of the ark that they were supposed to sacrifice some clean animals? You may not remember that. But God is a God who is perfect, and he expects the very best. He doesn't want sick animals. He doesn't want wounded animals. He doesn't want deformed animals. He wants to show that the death of the innocent is something that's very important, because that is what the promised one was going to have to go through. But anyway, this ram is caught by its thorns. By the horns. You know what thorns do? You stick your hand in a thorn bush, what happens when you pull your hand out? You'll probably get cut, and you'll have marks on your hand and that sort of thing, and it'll hurt. And chances are your fingers will bleed, and you'll go off, and you'll wrap up your fingers. Well, if an animal got caught in a thorn bush in its body, that would make the animal unacceptable to God, because the animal would be all scratched up. Where is this animal caught? It's caught in the horns. No scratches on the horns, which means the animal was perfectly unscratched. He was a perfectly acceptable sacrifice. A perfect animal as far as we can tell. And there's one other thing. The thorn bush that this thing is caught in, do you remember what thorns stand for in the Bible? Do you know where thorns first showed up in the Bible? We covered it before. If you want to go back to Genesis chapter 3. Right, right. Okay, we've got a guy who's putting this little puzzle together here. Back in chapter 3 of Genesis, do you remember when God was giving out his punishment to Adam and Eve for their disobedience? In Genesis chapter 3, verse 17, this is what he says to Adam, and this is the first time we see thorns. In verse 17 of chapter 3, he says, "To Adam he said, 'Because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree which I commanded you, you must not eat of it.'" Watch what he says. "Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat of it all the days of your life." Verse 18, here's our key verse. "It," that's the land, "will produce thorns and thistles for you." See that? Thorns are a sign of man's judgment, man's penalty. And so over in Genesis chapter 22, you have this animal that is caught by the thing that symbolizes man's penalty, man's judgment. An innocent animal, perfectly acceptable to God, not scratched, but caught in the thing that stands for man's judgment. The animal was caught by man's judgment, innocent, and he died. And what happened? Isaac was spared. And just like Abraham's faith, Isaac went free, they went back, and they rejoiced. And they were happy because they realized that God could provide for them even in the toughest of situations. And God can provide in the tough situations because he says he will provide some person coming down in history later on. That's where we're going toward in this Bible study, to find out who this person is, who this promised one is. If God can take care of the evil in the world, he can take care of our tough situation. And Abraham knew that. He believed God. And that's why he's a very famous person in history, especially among Jewish people, Christian people, and Muslim people. And this is where we want to stop. Next week we're going to find out Abraham did have a lot of descendants. He had a lot of people, and a whole nation came from Abraham, and they got into a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. So I'll pass you out the preview sheets for next week. You can read ahead if you want to and find out about some of the trouble that they got into, but they got into a whole heap of trouble. And we're going to find out who that nation was next week, and we're going to find out the trouble they got in, and we'll find out how they got out of their trouble. Okay? So I'm done. If anybody has any questions, I can take them next.